Hi Mara, great to have you for our second part of talks for Here Now TV. We stepped through a lot of ground during our first part, and I propose we just try to continue with what we started in the pre-discussion, and maybe discuss a little bit the subject of the work and why you do it, and how you see the overall situation with respect to healing into consciousness, to become conscious, and by becoming conscious, getting rid of suffering or minimizing, reducing suffering sustainably. Mm-hmm. So what would be your first statements regarding these subjects? Well,
the first statement, probably I'll start with you introduced healing into consciousness. Mm-hmm. Maybe I can start from there. And it's interesting, actually, story. When I was working on the book, In Search of the Miraculous, with my editor, who was also my student at the time, well, a good friend and a student, so it's a combination, you cannot separate it. And so as we're editing, and he was brilliant in helping to organize everything, I said in this sentence, I want to say healing in consciousness. And he said, that sounds, I don't think so. That's not, I've never heard this before. I said, no, this has to be there, healing into consciousness, because that's the whole principle of this book. That's the whole principle of what we do. We're basically, it's a transformation, and my way of to explain what is enlightenment is to say healing into consciousness, because once you're conscious, you're obviously in the light. So you see things, you're conscious. That's the journey. And he just suddenly had a light bulb moment. He said, okay, I see it. Mm-hmm. And that's how it became the subtitle of the book, Healing into Consciousness. And the whole process, and it's really interesting how you got it, you said it. So I think you got the meaning of it when you say this.
Yeah, for me, this is crystal clear.
Yeah, and many people now are coming, especially when I also do this healing work with my method. They come and they say, I want to heal into consciousness. So there's an understanding already, and this is a lot, for me, it's a lot simpler to follow than an idea of enlightenment. So if the goal becomes enlightenment, people go, oh, I don't know, I'm not reachable, I cannot reach this. But when we say healing into consciousness, people can feel that, okay, I can attain it.
Yeah, step by step.
Step by step become conscious. And it is a step by step preparation process, in a way. Because why do we need to become more conscious? In order to contain the experience, because experience is available to everybody. Existence is not stingy, it's very generous.
Life is an experience. From my point of view, life is experience after experience after experience after experience. Like the movie, running all the time, all the time. That's life itself.
Exactly, and opportunities are infinite to experience. Yeah. So when the mind gets confused or starts thinking, well, I have to do something to attain this thing, because the teachers say, well, enlightenment is when the illusion disappears, then people go, well, this is hard, I don't know how to do this, and I better go sit down and listen to somebody talk, then maybe I can get it, maybe it can happen to me just because I'm near somebody who's
cheap.
And that's such an illusion. That's
it's a misperception, yeah?
Absolutely, because you need to do the work. Nobody can do it for you. No matter how much you sit next to the greatest person, the greatest mystic, the greatest enlightened person, still you have to do the work. That's why people like Osho, people like Buddha, they bring in methods. Because they know, no matter how much they speak, they cannot pass it on to you. I know this because I'm helpless. A person comes, asks me a question, I know no matter what I say, it's going to be useless. You know, useful to a very small degree, but the person needs to do the work. So that's why the methods are so important. And that's why the process of healing into consciousness, once we understand it, it becomes so much more simple than, okay, I can relax. At least I know the steps. I can do the best I can and understand that what is ultimately necessary is to learn to surrender, to learn to accept what is, because that's the struggle of the ego when it doesn't accept it.
Yeah. Yes.
So that's the process. And it's joyful. It's so much fun to do this internal work.
Yes.
Understand what they're missing when they don't do it, when they get afraid, they feel, oh, I don't want to go there, it's too dark, I don't want to see what's in my unconscious, I don't want to feel the pain. People don't understand what they're missing by not going there.
Meditation is boring, I rather do not want to waste my time. Yeah, these are things that I hear sometimes. Yeah.
It's boring for the mind, of course. The meditation is boring for the mind because it's not engaged in any activity. So the mind is therefore making a conclusion. Boring. Of course it's going to be boring for the mind.
I see two aspects basically in the work. One is the aspect of surrendering, which you already said clearly. The other thing, to me, it appears that it is also about seeing unconscious survival programs fundamentally, which are traumata, and just force us for certain actions and behavior patterns, which we really are not aware of, but they happen all the time. And this healing aspect, from my point of view, is very much also related to getting rid of such conditionings and traumata and related behavior patterns.
That's why we call it healing into consciousness, because healing is absolutely the part of that transformation. And we cannot get rid of anything, we can only transform things. So when we want to get rid of something, it means we're still struggling with it. But when we look at something and say, okay, I feel pain, I feel fear, what is the cause of this? What is it trying to teach me? Because in that learning, what it has to teach you is where consciousness comes in, transformation happens. And that's why also my healing method and the self version of it, so that you take every opportunity you can that life offers you to see how I can transform this little, whatever it is, obstacle or a struggle or pain or fear quickly into consciousness. And the funny thing is the moment the consciousness comes in, it's like instant joy that follows it. To do more, then you want to dig more, you want to explore yourself more, and then as you start exploring, you start understanding yourself, not only yourself, but you start understanding other people, because nobody's different. And not only that, you start really feeling compassion. And the truth comes when you understand that I'm not separate, that everybody goes through the same thing. And even, you know, you were saying, many of the experiences we shared last time, you said there were similar experiences you had, and this was a good surprise or interesting surprise for you. The thing is that this is, again, the mind thinks, well, if somebody has an experience of awakening, it's particularly their experience. Well, it's not. Everybody has different ways of experiencing it, but once you get to the consciousness of it, it's the same. Same way, we all experience pain the same way. Yeah? It's we all experience fear the same way. Fear you know, competitiveness, jealousy, all those human emotions, we all experience the same way. Nobody's different when they're experiencing it. Why should the experience of enlightenment be different? You see, there's intensity, different intensity. You can have pain, a mild pain, a more severe pain. Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And obviously, if I have experienced a mild pain, I wouldn't necessarily relate to your severe pain or vice versa, but I still would relate to the pain.
Yes.
Because I know how pain feels. If I experience love, I know how it feels. So when somebody else feels it, and you know when the two people are feeling that feeling, yeah? So why should experience of enlightenment be any different?
Hmm.
The intensity could be different. The awareness could be different based on each person's journey, where, how far they've traveled in how many lifetimes they've had, how much they've explored themselves. So this is where the differences come in. Because some people might have explored themselves for longer time, so they have come across to learn more things, so there's more experiences they've accumulated. Like Osho said, and it's been said also historically, that out of 1,000 enlightened people, only one becomes a master. And that's based on, not because the person's awareness is different, what it is based on is the person's experience and what they bring in terms of the skills they have learned through their other lifetimes.
You're talking about other lifetimes. I have some question marks. I wonder how these other lifetimes should happen. Who would have these other lifetimes? For me, this appears more to be some energies which are in a field, but to relate it to lifetimes, I cannot see this connection at the moment. Huh? Can you elaborate on this one a little bit?
Yes. What happens is once you start looking inside and start peeling away the layers, transforming the layers of the unconscious within, you are bound to come to layers that are coming from previous lifetimes. What are those layers? Basically, they're patterns. They're thinking patterns, they're belief patterns, mm-hmm. They're that are associated with the ego personality.
Mm-hmm.
And these patterns are important to see, because once you see and transform a pattern, then your consciousness expands even further.
Yes.
So to come, there's the higher we go in consciousness, the lower we need to go into the unconscious. It's a proportionate work.
Hmm? Yes.
Because everything must have been existence. The deeper you go into the unconscious, obviously, the more your consciousness grows.
Yes.
If I remember my past lives as being an animal, for example, then I'm going into the cosmic unconscious. Yeah? So there's the personal unconscious. This is what I also described in the book. The cosmic, the personal unconscious, there's the collective unconscious, to understand what are the patterns that I have been conditioned by the society mm-hmm. I'm in, mm-hmm. and believe as true. So that's the collective unconscious, which is a difficult one to break through. And then there is the cosmic unconscious, which we need to come into those layers of the animals, the plants, the rocks, because we've transitioned through all these experiences. Yeah? So, but not necessarily every person has transitioned through those experiences per se. It could be that there's new souls are born every time, every moment. It's every moment as we speak. Just like babies are born every second.
It's the creation process, endless creation going on. Yeah? So this thing is pure creation, nothing else. So
in the whole existence, it keeps creating. Yeah?
Yes.
So
yes.
Those souls that are being incarnated, the new souls, so to speak, obviously they don't have the same experiences that an older soul would have. And we speak about the planet. I'm talking about the planet. There's new souls that are coming into a physical existence.
Okay.
And that could be their first physical existence in a human body. Because evolution is such that we don't necessarily have to go through all the, you know, animal lives and plant lives and etc. We can immediately come into a human life. But of course, the soul that comes into a human life would not have that wisdom that another one might have who's come through the experiences of different other lifetimes. So, again, this is part of the unknown. It's like a sense that this is what happens, but nobody knows. It's part of the unknown, and it cannot be known. Yeah?
Yeah. But you say you were an animal in past lifetimes and you were rocks or whatever. I don't know exactly what you say. And how do you believe you know, and how does this work?
Well, the last chapter of my book, I wrote about that extensively, and also described some of my past lives there. Because remembering those lives, it's just a simple remembrance, a recognition that, I see it. It's all about consciousness, yes? So you go into the unconscious, you start seeing those lives. And why do we need to see them is, like I said, to recognize the patterns that we're still carrying. So yes, I saw a life. For example, there's several animal lives that I've had, and I'm sure you've had. You need to figure those out yourself, and everybody else too. But and I do that. It's fun work, actually. In my retreats, I get people to actually contact their animal and actually understand those trends that animals bring. For example, I've been a panther. Let me just... I forgot to. Just one second. You hate this, right? When the interview happens, the phone rings. Okay,
I don't care. It was supposed to ring now, you know?
I've complained. But, sorry about that. So, what I was saying is that the... for example, when I was working with my editor and I was going through that section of the animal past mm-hmm. lives, mm-hmm. and I remembered one of the animals I've been is Black Panther.
Mm-hmm.
There's other animals that I've been to that I've written there. But when I was trying to explain to my editor that this is the section we're working on the cosmic unconscious, and so this is the way to understand your animal and understand your traits and your gifts, because every animal has a gift. There's a medicine. In Native American language, every animal carries a medicine.
Okay.
It's a sacred medicine with each animal, and because they all have their own traits. So what does a black panther do? It's a sort of like a solitary animal, likes to rest on the trees, watch what's going on. It doesn't really like to engage too much. It's hard to see black panthers. They're usually
shy.
Mm-hmm. At night they go out and they're sort of like... But there's a lot of wisdom in them. They see, they don't attack, you know, unless they're hungry, right? So those kind of things. And there's that strength, that self-sufficiency, etc. So, and my editor, as we started working, he was experimenting with everything that obviously we're working on the book with. And he then remembered his life as a mouse. So he was a mouse. And what does a mouse have as a as a quality. They like to organize things. They compartmentalize things. So he did that with my book. He compartmentalized it. He organized it. I couldn't have done it.
And he did this a great job.
Awesome. And which I could have not done. I just, you know, speak the big concepts, and then he would sort of organize it into little chunks that are possible for the mind to comprehend. And this is how we create the orchestra. With each other, because everybody brings that kind of a trend that is unique to that person. And of course, when we don't get educated to see those things, or what we don't experience those things inside, then we're trained to compete, we're trained to basically that whole education system makes people feel insecure, inadequate, less than somebody else. Well, once you start on
Trying to eliminate weak points, this is a big misconception. Instead of focusing and increasing the strength, the educational system tries to leverage, to level out things, and make the weak points less weak, which I think is a total confusion. Then it makes people feel bad and insufficient and frustrates. It leads into frustration instead of orchestrating, as you described it beautifully.
Much pain on the planet.
Yes. Yeah, but coming back to these past lives, so I also did some experiences, some exercises regarding trying to look into past lives, and there is a meditation available. It's a CD by a guy who gives a guided meditation with spirit helper and such stuff. Yeah? And a couple of years ago, I just for fun played around with it, and then suddenly clear biographies showed. So I was surprised by the clearness of all this.
So everything is.
Yeah, but later, when this consciousness thing seems to have expanded further, it did not work anymore. So the only thing that appears, and I intentionally did such an exercise before we had our first interview, it all falls into this cosmic, I don't know, undefined creational thing that is going on here. So I cannot see any details. It just finishes with this cosmic thing over. So I came to the conclusion, probably these earlier experiences were some kind of a projection of mind, just reflections of tendencies which are here, and they were transformed into an idea of a past life by the stimulation of this meditation. So I'm wondering, what am I missing here, or what is going on here?
One thing to understand, to keep in mind, every experience is only that. It's just an experience.
Sure.
Ultimately, all experiences come and go.
Sure.
And what is the most important part out of the experience is the learning of what learns through this experience. Once I learned it, okay, I don't need to keep remembering the experience. I can let it go. And that's the part that is missing, especially in healing work also, that people don't understand that they want to fix something and not feel something. Well, the only way you can fix it is by seeing the lesson. The moment you see the lesson, what you have been bothered with is not going to bother you anymore. Yeah. And this is so constantly a part of what I've seen. Well, I've been working with this method for almost 20 years with people. And it's instant. The transformation healing is instant the moment consciousness comes in.
Yes.
So the whole process of healing is basically how to make a person conscious. That's all. And the moment the person becomes conscious, healing happens not just on the mental, physical, emotional level, but also physical level. And physical illnesses that are incurable start suddenly curing themselves, because body is not meant to be sick. Right? The body is just meant to run perfectly. Existence created it perfectly. But what makes the body sick is all the repressed thoughts, emotions, unconscious beliefs, all those things that are stuck in the body is what makes the body sick. So even, you know, healing modalities such as acupuncture, for example, what does it do? So it puts needles in the blood points, opens up the energy flows, so the person starts feeling good. But then the same blockages reoccur because the underlying beliefs that are causing the blockage is not removed.
Yeah.
So with this method, I think once people start experimenting with it, they're going to very quickly transform into consciousness and heal their ailments too. Because what this does is goes exactly into the block to see what is in the block. What are the beliefs in the block? You release the block, release the beliefs through the method, and it's a system that would help you release it through breathing and expression. And suddenly the block is transformed into consciousness, and that's it. You say goodbye to whatever issue that was, and then you move deeper, and you get more excited about feeling lighter. And this is where life comes in too, because through this method, you are bound at some point or other to start experiencing past lives without looking for them. Then the mind is not engaged looking for a past life. You have an experience of past life simply to see that, I've been struggling with my parents, and I've had so many cases like that. People come and they're really angry at their parents. Hmm. And mother didn't give me, you know, I didn't get any love, I didn't get any attention, et cetera, et cetera. And they're really angry. And then as we work and they suddenly this past life experience comes and they see, oh my God, in a past life, I was the parent and this was my child and I treated my mother the same way or my father the same way as he treated me. The moment a person sees that, they go, oh, I see it now. I needed to have that experience so I can see my own behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And the person sees their own behavior, there is the great compassion and forgiveness and understanding and love that automatically happens.
Okay, so the past life, the so-called past life in that example that you made, could also be some kind of a generation by the system to make this point clear. You have to see the other side also in order to heal.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we are not talking literal past lives, because this would raise many questions. So what lives again? What has past lives? And then we would start coming in deep discussions. It's just about the experience of, about seeing the other part of the experience, the other side of the experience, to make it complete.
That's the learning.
To get the learning, yeah.
Yeah, because the whole world is a mirror. It just reflects back what we need to learn about ourselves. And then we fight mirrors instead of seeing that, okay, this mirror is reflecting something, so I can learn something about myself. Mm. Yeah, and that's where that whole new age sort of feel good systems fit. They couldn't point and they fail. Then they go. They don't go any further because it's not about, oh, I was abused, so poor me. You know, I'm feeling like a victim. It's not about that. It's about, okay, you had the experience. What was the experience teaching you? What is it teaching you? And I've worked with victims of sexual abuse, for example.
Yeah.
And interestingly, every case is a little bit different, yeah, because individuals are different. But what we come to is that the spirit recognizes, first of all, that I had to learn something. For example, one case could be that she needed to learn that I was an abuser in my previous lifetime. So I abused these people, so they're coming back and doing the same thing to me so I could see how it feels. Yeah. And another case of sexual abuse, for example, is where the child was the wife of the father in a previous lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So, many variations.
Yeah, when I relate this to my experiences or to my inner world, I came to a point at one stage where I saw that the cruelty of persons like Stalin or Hitler or whoever they might be is my cruelty. Yeah? So it was really in me, and these persons, these so to say outer persons, were in me, and I could see this is me. It is not separate at all, and something like love happened at that moment, even for these appearances or whatever it is, yeah. And then silence and peace and rest came somehow. Huh? So maybe that is another way of learning this lesson. Huh? I don't know. It was so clear. It was so obvious. Yeah,
that's the truth. What you just said. And in India, they have a cave called Elephanta Cave. It's about half an hour boat ride, half an hour from Bombay. And okay. When you go to the cave, there are all statues that are carved out of the cave. So some statues outside, they're like Shiva statues. And then you go inside, there's some Buddhist statues. And one of the statues is the Trinity. It's interesting, it's also Trinity, but it's the true Trinity, not the Christian type of Trinity, yeah? And when you go into when you look at this statue, and it's one rock, mm-hmm. but three faces. So one face on the right, one face on the left, and then one face in the middle. So when you go to look at the right side of the face, you see this angry face destroyer. It destroys, right? And you could tell it's like there's a lot of power, there's a lot of ego, there's a lot of enjoyment in destroying. That's why people destroy, because there's joy in it. It's, mm-hmm. it's you know, the other side of the...
The kick, yeah? It's the kick, yeah?
The other side of the creative joy. So you go to the other side, the profile, on exactly opposite it, you see the this beautiful, calm face of the creator. So it's like, it's a face that creates and enjoys. There's a gentle joy of creation in it. Yeah? Mm-hmm. You could tell there's an emotion in the statue of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And come to the middle, you stand in front, and you see the Buddha face, where there's absolutely no emotion, there's no good or bad. There's no destruction or creation. There's simply a witness of just a witnessing this just presence. That's all. The truth and reality in each person. Every person has that.
All three. Yeah.
To the middle is to recognize both sides. If you deny one side, and I say no, I just choose the good side because society says this is, you know, I need to be good, mm-hmm. and I reject the other side, then you're never going to find the Buddha side.
Mm-hmm.
You come to the middle. But to come to the middle, you have to recognize that, yes, I'm capable of destroying, and yes, I'm capable of creating, but then the Buddha is conscious, and conscious action does not create karma.
Yes.
Yeah, so this is where the concept, the understanding that a Buddha's life could be his last life. So he has a choice not to come back because he's learned the lessons. He does not need to learn more. He's learned the duality, has transcended it. And why do we keep coming back into another life? Because we haven't completed things. We haven't really... there's still karmic lessons that we need to learn, and all our relationships pretty much are karmic.
Yeah.
So no accidents anywhere. Yeah.
Still, it is for me. It is this coming back is a picture of the soul for me. it's not my experience that I can say I'm totally convinced that something is coming back and karma has to be resolved. I cannot.
If you look into your current relationships, yes, you can look deeper, yes, will see the patterns. All you need to do is see the patterns that you're repeating, because people who, for example, have had many relationships or several relationships, and what they do is they come to a point with the relationship and they feel, okay, this is not going my way, so this is not working. I leave. I start another relationship. And then comes to the same point. It's not working. I leave. So once you start looking at inside yourself, why is it that you keep repeating the same pattern and same thing happens over and over again, then you can cut that karmic cord. Otherwise, you have to keep repeating the same thing. And never.
Yes. Yeah, that's clear. I mean, as soon as I would say this karmic cord or this karmic thing, but you say I would call conditioning, yeah, which somehow is programmed in me. I don't even care how it came, but it's there, but it's not seen. Yeah? So and when it is conscious, then it loses its power. Yeah? So that's it. Yeah?
Sometimes those things are also generational. In other words, or your ancestors before you have the pattern, and you're repeating the pattern of it's an ancestral pattern, and many people, especially this time, are becoming aware of those ancestral patterns, and they're taking the step of cutting those cords that is going to help not only you but your whole ancestry before you and after you. So There's those behavior patterns that continue from generation to generation, and it's not.
Yeah, this is clear, but isn't it conditioning? When I look into my past and I see the differences in the family of my father and my mother, I see clear structures there. And my father told me, he passed away 2 years ago, he told me that the spirit in my mother's family was very similar to what I experienced from my mother. Yeah? So isn't that just conditioning from generation to generation?
It's part of the conditioning, but not absolutely conditioning. Because like I said, there is your personal unconscious, then there's the collective unconscious. So, in the personal unconscious, there is a family could have a trend.
Yes.
Every family has a trend. And yes, behavioral trend that passes from generation to generation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some families are more loving and kind mm-hmm. to each other, continues, and some families are more aggressive, and there's lots more in a struggle and internal struggle between siblings, between, you know, cousins and etc. So those are trends that pass on, and it's not really conditioning, but it's more like a behavior pattern.
Okay.
And children learn by watching their parents.
Yes.
One thing we need to also keep in mind is that this is where responsibility comes back to each individual, that you get attracted to certain family because you also have that trend beforehand, or maybe you were in that generational chain before you died, you're coming back into the same family line. Yeah? So why? Because in a way you need to have the mirrors reflecting you back your own patterns, your own programs, so you can see it and transcend it. That's quite, it's not an easy thing, it's a complex thing, and each person is different with this. I've worked with many people with those generational chains that they have actually had to cut the cord for the whole generation for that pattern. For example, I had a woman who came and she had extensive bleeding. So bleeding is not conditioning, it's bleeding. She's bleeding. Yes. She's extremely continually bleeding.
Yes.
And her mother had it.
Yes.
Her grandmother So before that, the women in that chain had this extensive bleeding pattern.
Okay.
It's in the body. Yeah.
I so have no doubt about that. Yeah. So this bodily expression is possible. Yeah. It's possible from generation to generation. Why not? Yeah.
So then what the lessons were once she learned her lessons, once she started clearing her own conditionings and started working with her own process, then came the time where she became aware that actually this pattern, whatever she was working with, it was passing on through the whole chain. Her mother, her grandmother, they all had the same behavior patterns. And she saw it, she can see that I am here, I'm going to help my whole, you know, generation before me and after me, that I'm going to cut this cord of this pattern. And once she did that, the bleeding stopped, and it's not going to continue. You see? So then it's stopped for her, and it's going to stop for her children, and it's not going to continue in that way anymore. And whoever was before her, energetically, even though they're not alive, on some level, we're all connected. They're going to get it, because nothing is separate.
So I would say in my language, I think we have here semantic issues. Huh? I would say that this energy of this phenomenon, of this physical phenomenon, just came to rest. Huh? The imbalance or whatever we would call it. Huh? And I do not think in terms of souls going from one generation to the other. Huh? I do not need this picture, or that's not my thinking or speaking habit. Huh?
So that's probably because it's not your experience, but I speak from experience. Working with people one and one, and therefore I say this with authority, not from my head.
I'm sure, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Of course, this is what I was saying initially, that we all have our own journeys and we gather experiences and as a result we also have certain understanding or knowledge about things based on our experiences, and everybody's different. You might know things I don't know because you've experienced them and I haven't, and vice versa. So this is how we can then, the only thing that we can do as humans, be open for experiences of other people and learn through what they might be able to teach us and bring us.
Mm. Yeah, I would not discard it. Huh? I just would like to challenge it and share my experience with your experience in order that it becomes visible. Huh? And
last time we spoke, we worked with fear.
Yes.
Talking about fear. And obviously, your body remembered that fear.
Yes.
Your mind said, well, I'm not afraid. But then once you actually went through the bodily memory, then that's where you could actually say for sure, now this is ridiculous, because now I know that whatever I was afraid of when I was a child, I'm not afraid.
Yeah, that was a great discovery for me, just to see, suddenly there was pure fear. It was subtle, but it was there. It was very clear. And sensing it and knowing that it's not there are two different things.
That's right. And body remembers everything. Body knows. Because everything is there. Yeah.
Somehow it seems, I do not even know that, because where it really is, I don't know. I can understand that using these words and these pictures make a lot of sense, but in the end, how it all works, I have no idea. I can guess that when I create stress or have fear, this has a bodily expression. This seems to be obvious, but where it happens and how it happens, I have no idea. hopeless. But what I know also is doing exercises like that breathing exercise or that exercises you propose, they have an effect, and they have positive effects. That's my experience. Other people might have completely other experiences.
It works for each single person. This method works for every single person. Mm-hmm. And the reason it does is because it's something when we have a discovery, it's not a personal sort of thing that creates the discovery. You discover something based on experimentation. This is how science discovers things, yeah? So, and based on experimentation and work is what I saw, that the thoughts, the beliefs, or the thought forms, every experience, every time we have an experience, we think something, we don't say it, we don't communicate, we hold back, we hold that thought in our energy. Or whenever we have an experience, we make a conclusion about the experience. This is bad. This is painful. That thought is imprinted in the body. It stays because we think it. We do not express it.
Mm-hmm.
And if we look at humans, most of the time they think. It's like people are thinking machines. It's like walking thinking machines. But of the time, they don't really express what is truly happening inside in terms of what are they thinking, what are they feeling. They wouldn't say that. On the contrary, they will, when they feel lousy and somebody says, well, how are you? And you go, I'm fine. So, and we have so many repressions like this. And those repressions are what stays in the body, those thought forms. And when they stay in the body, no matter how much intellectually we do work or imagine to do the work, we cannot really go into the root and erase, transform what we have been accumulating. So if somebody continually feels fear and anxiety in their school, in their life, and we know kids feel anxiety when they have to go to exams, they feel anxiety when they have to perform in school, then they feel anxiety when you have to go to work and you have to perform. It's like starts from very early on and accumulates, and nobody goes around and says, I feel anxious. They feel it.
Yes.
But where does all those thoughts go? They can't go anywhere. They stay in your energy. And that's how they start creating physical ailments.
Exactly. They create cancer. They create
All those physical ailments. And then pharmaceutical industries come and say, well, we're going to, now here's a drug. Take this drug. And you take depression, for example. It's number one illness. In North America, I don't know how it is in around the world, but in North America, number one illness is depression. Cancer is number two. So why so many people are depressed? And so then the pharmaceutical industry goes, here, take Prozac, take this, and it's going to solve your problems. And all the professionals prescribe these medications, basically feeding the pharmaceutical industry. And there was, I don't know, years ago, there was this whole big thing about the natural herbs coming in into the market as an alternative for pharmaceuticals. And pharmaceutical industry was trying to make them illegal.
Yes.
So, you know, it's all about status quo. It's all about what going to satisfy the people who are in power and have control of money. But ultimately, all these things can be very easily resolved. And I've worked with people who've been on medication, like that, medications, for 20, 25 years. And just within 10 days of working through the intensives that I do or doing a few sessions, They let go of the medication. They don't touch it anymore. So if that's possible, and now it's possible with you actually working with this method on your own, very quickly transforming those unconscious layers, then of course pharmaceutical industry is not going to like something like this. Well, thankfully, you know, everything in a chaos right now. So a lot of things are being surfaced that people are starting to discover that they've been repressed. This is the part of the collective unconscious that is starting to crumble.
What I clearly can say also from my biography, it is possible to get rid of suffering by using such methods. I cannot comment on the physical side because I also could comment on that one because I never took medication. But there are certain things that I was suffering with. For example, I have some coxarthrosis in the hips where I really had problems when I was around 30, and at least the symptoms have disappeared. And the x-ray looks similar to what I have seen 20 years ago.
So it's all about consciousness.
The power of consciousness is what heals.
That's period. You know? That's why in healing work, we need to take another step. We need to go beyond what we've been doing up till now, even in the healing world. Because humanity has come to a place, if it's going to survive, each person has to take responsibility for their own health and their own transition. Because if that does not happen, the old paradigm is, I don't like to do this work. I'd rather go and have some professional do it for me. And therefore, we've had all these professionals that we've trained them so that they can handle the masses, and obviously professionals can only do so much, and they don't know what they're doing many times because they are also having their own problems they haven't solved, and so therefore it's easy to prescribe medication and move on. I could give you 15 minutes, here's the prescription, and next person.
Yes.
So and the whole humanity, there's so many people that are in a place of need. They need some kind of assistance somewhere, but the education is missing, that people need to understand that you have the power. Everything is already given to you. You have it all. And you need to start taking responsibility. And the reason we don't have that awareness is because in schools we don't teach children that you have all the answers, you don't have to compete. We teach children you need to compete and you have to be better than other people or other kids. And, you know, the way you are, you're not okay. So until this changes in the education system, until the whole education system starts incorporating meditation and Osho calls it the five-dimensional education system, until they incorporate meditation, until they incorporate the awareness of death so that children understand, and children know this. They don't need sugarcoating. They know it, that death exists. They know it, that past lives exist. Believe it or not, because when I work with children, and many times the patterns right away that they're working with, they need to work with, is past life patterns they come with. And when I ask them, do you believe in past lives? They go, well, yeah, because they know it. There's like, remember it, you see? They're very fresh. So, and very, if we give them the right education, children can actually take this world into the next phase of its evolution. Otherwise, I don't know how it's going to happen. Because the adults have so much problems already. They carry so many problems. And the adults, they do work, they liberate themselves, they feel a bit better, and that's great because it creates little puncture holes in the pain that the whole world is surrounded by, the planet is surrounded by, but it's the new generation, the children, that are the most important. Because we want to change the whole lifestyle that we've lived up to now.
Do you see examples where schools or other groups or communes are educating children according to these principles, or in line with what is necessary to overcome these pain patterns?
Well, I think there are some schools that are probably starting to open to the idea of meditation, but again, in order for them to fully open, the staff, the teachers need to be educated. They need to do their own personal work so they understand how to help the child. And unfortunately, in the institutions like universities where they prepare teachers, they are not that. So the whole thing is just absolutely outdated, and it's against the person. The whole education system is against the individual.
As far as I remember, Jay Krishnamurti founded some schools. Maybe you don't know the details. We don't have to know the details. I think I share your judgment. The solution can only come when the teachers are people who have done the work.
That's the only way I see it. And at the same time, it's really hard because it's all to do with funding. The status quo wouldn't fund this kind of schools. You see, Osho had a school, the Osho Koswan in England. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's closed because the funding is not there. And these kids excelled. They did 20% better than the normal school kids in schools. And, of course, the people that were teaching in the Koswan school were just the Osho's sannyasins, and they were doing their own work, so they had some awareness when teaching those kids. But it all comes to money, bottom line. It's all funding. Yeah, and what I find is once in a while I do workshops for children, and parents just love to bring their kids to do some workshops, but the system does not support it. The system, school system, does not hire teachers that can do this kind of work. I was even training some young adults to become teachers in schools and train, and they tried to do that. They tried to bring meditation to schools. But the school system is so rigid. They're so afraid. It's just a matter of fear. They're afraid. If I change something, if I bring something, well, my superiors, I'm going to lose my job because, you know, worried about their job. Everybody's worried about, it's all about, how am I going to survive if I go against this, if I do something innovative, if I bring something new? So private schools are more open.
Mm.
I think private schools is where more of these kind of things coming in. But in terms of public schools, it's very, very hard.
Mm. So something like a big bang would be needed when Warren Buffett or Bill Gates would open schools according to such principles, that might set a signal. But even then, until it is in politics and in public schools, is a long way.
It's a long way, so I don't hope that we can see it in our lifetime. But whatever work is done to prepare. And one thing, though, there's a lot of hope. That these children that are coming in, they're more gutsy, they're more courageous, they're more aware. So, and they're going to be the ones to make the change. The old generation is not going to make the change. It's impossible. But definitely, the kids that are coming now are definitely going to be able to make that change.
What difference do you see between the last generations of children and the new generation? What is the difference? What can you see there?
What I see is that the new generation children, they ask questions. they don't just say, yeah, okay, this is how it is because my father and my mother said so. So they're more self-exploratory. They explore themselves more. So they like to know exploration. And also, we have to keep in mind the technology that we have now is also helping children to be self-sustainable in their search. So they have to do their own search on internet. They have to do their own search, you know, with all these devices. And so the teacher's role is becoming less and less and less, because everything's going into those mobile devices that the whole education is going to start happening with them. And therefore, the teachers are not going to be needed anymore.
So when you write a book, you might write, Google yourself. Huh?
But
the title might be Google yourself.
I was watching a program yesterday, which was very interesting. It was about MS. And... Yeah. Multiple sclerosis. And somebody in Italy, he discovered that there were certain arteries that are being clogged for most of MS patients. And then he did a simple procedure, angioplasty, I believe they call it, to expand those arteries.
So
what happened? And these people started recovering. And MS, as you know, it's a deteriorating disease. And so it started going viral through internet and social media. And when it came to Canada, the government opposed, the doctors opposed, so everybody was opposing the treatment, which was called radiation treatment. And how people were picketing, and the establishment does not want to bring these kind of simple solutions because the whole pharmaceutical industry is going to suffer, because the pharmaceutical industry feeds more drugs to any kind of illness. They don't want people to get better.
Mm-hmm.
If people get better, they cannot sell the drugs. Yeah, and the impact that the social media had and the pressure that the social media had on the government for them to finally approve some testing in Canada. Otherwise, they were close to it. They were just flatly refusing. So the pressure of social media, the Googling, the internet, is what forced the government to start allowing to do some testing. So there is power in the internet. Yeah, and the same way, the power is going to go to those children who are using those devices now.
Hmm.
So they know, okay, I can look for answers. I can explore. I'm not going to buy everything that I'm told. And interestingly, the same...
They have to, yeah, they have to. Otherwise, because there's so much crap on the internet as well. So they have to develop strategies to come to conclusions what is really value and what is crap. Huh? So they are really forced to think deeper. That's true. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And also the freedom that the media or the internet is giving with YouTube, for example. People post their videos. And even though there's always this element that would say, well, this healing modality is a hoax, which they mm-hmm. did. This Italian doctor. But then there is the opposite, that you can see people who are saying, well, look at me here, and I'm on the video. Here's how I was, and here's how I am. So then, obviously, it gives each individual an opportunity to start making their own choices and start thinking. Not just taking whatever they're told as a gospel.
Mm-hmm.
This is the beauty of our age, and I think this is what's going to really create that
silent
revolution. Like we're talking right now, people who are listening to us, maybe, you know, from 10 years from now, maybe after we're not even here, might pick up things we're saying now.
Yeah. Yeah, who knows? Who knows? Huh?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so amazing. Yeah. As I said during our last conversation, without the internet, I probably would have been lost after the first insights. Yeah? So.
And even this kind of work, right, Reinhold, it's impossible that spirituality could have taken so much, or people could have learned so much and been educated so much if it wasn't for internet and for what you do. Because what you're doing, you're basically educating people. Yeah? So we're talking right now. It's education. That's all we're doing. At least we're bringing some ideas to people that they can start thinking about and exploring, experimenting.
Just throw some balls into the game, yeah, and then see what happens. I do not even care. Yeah? We have this conversation, then finish, and we do the next, and we may do another one. Yeah.
But that's, enjoy doing what we're doing, but that's the beautiful thing, that it has no agenda, and yet it has an impact.
Yes. It's just, it is what it is. I benefited a lot from videos done by others.
Yeah.
Just sharing and learning.
And growing.
Yeah. Googling myself. Inwardly and outwardly.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, in the early 20th century, there was a Jesuit person called Teilhard de Chardin. He originally, I believe, was French, and he did some scientific works in China and in Asia, and he wrote a book summarizing his insights, and there were some predictions done by him which almost predicted the internet, so this global connectedness on Earth as a major next step that would come.
So and I think this is the time to really take advantage before suddenly the internet disappears. Because there's also an awareness in those powers that the internet is making a huge difference and shaking the status quo. They know it.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Example, I gave you. So, and interestingly enough, it started from government needing this kind of device, like an internet, World Wide Web. So it started from military.
Yeah.
On that basis. And how now it's going, as a matter of fact, benefiting people, and how it's going and against the originators in a way, right, that wanted some kind of control. So everything has two sides to the coin. And
yes.
The thing is, all the connections, all these things that we learn in this time, that people learn and they become aware of, even suddenly there's a blackout, still, all that education, all that understanding is going to help to bring people inwards. Because just imagine, suddenly there was no internet. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I will run around and
you start enjoying the moment, start just living. That's the whole thing that we're trying to talk about right now. Going in. So instead of freaking out and being afraid and, you know, not knowing where to turn, at least, oh yeah, I can do this, I can meditate, I can look inside, I can transform myself. So this is what this whole, I don't know, past 10 years especially, has been preparing people with the internet kind of program that you're starting, if I was to present my healing method 10 years ago, it could have not been understood. Everything that people did up to now helped for people's understanding to deepen so they can understand what this is going to do for them. And I'm convinced that the moment it's released, which is going to be in a few months, maybe beginning of next year, it will be the right time because people's consciousness is ready to work with something like this.
Yeah, I agree that certain people will be ready, but the big majority, I have question marks there. So this is not a mass movement yet. Not yet.
You know, there was a saying by Gurdjieff and by Osho that if there's 200 enlightened people on the planet at one time, the consciousness will be transformed for the whole planet. So, and 200 people is not a big number.
Do you believe there are less?
I had a vision, which I wrote in the epilogue of my book. And the vision was, and this vision came actually right after Osho left his body in India. And the vision was that I saw a ball of light surrounded by sea of darkness. And this was like a cosmic vision. So this ball of light represented the light of all the awakened people up until that point in time, many of them not incarnated. And the darkness represented the unconsciousness on the planet and at the same time in the universe, in the cosmos. And what I saw also that suddenly within speed of light, there were light streams that were entering this ball of light from all directions. It was very quick. And when that happened, there was a second of standstill, like everything stopped, no movement. And in that no-movement state, there was like a, you know how you have those scales? Yeah?
That balance, have. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Scale. Mm-hmm.
And it was like that balance, everything stopped. And it was, which way is going the needle go? And in that moment, there was one last light stream that almost forcibly was pulled into the light by a bigger ball of light, and that's what made the difference, and it tipped to the light. So mm-hmm. It was after that vision, I was very there was a sort of like a joyful feeling knowing that the doomsday that they talk about is not going to happen. It's not going to be destruction, and there would be this transformation just by that light that grew. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. that being enough light, it's just like, imagine you're coming into a dark room with a little candle in your hand. Yeah?
Yes.
And you see little areas, but you don't see everything. Suddenly you turn on the light, and suddenly the whole room is illuminated. That's the difference between one person light and that collective light that grew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The moment you enter that light, the I as the ego disappears.
Sure.
Then because there's no ego, you do not contribute in the what feeds the whole world, which is the ego. Then you bring in something else. And that bright light sort of almost like suddenly you look at the sun coming out from the dark room and you feel like you're getting blinded, but whatever you knew in the dark room disappears because of that moment of sun suddenly blinding you. Yeah?
Mm.
And in that moment, you don't remember the dark room you came out of anymore. Suddenly you're in a new place. And even though you don't see what's happening, you see that you're in a new place, and it's like a bright new place. And that's what can happen to many people.
Yeah, these are fundamentally these awakening experiences, which really can be very dramatic.
If the person hasn't awakened themselves, being in that light is going to bring them to a different perception of reality. And that's the transformation, just a different perception of reality. That's all it is. That's all it is.
Yeah. That's all. Yeah.
Perception of reality. Yeah. So many things.
Oh, we could discuss for weeks.
It's good talk. Yeah. It's always good too. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really enjoying the stillness and the silence. I mean, what choice do you have when you see this and have such experiences? You cannot not transmit it. No choice. So obvious and so beautiful.
The thing is, everything is beautiful. Yeah. The mind can be beautiful. Everything is part of it. It's just as long as we know when we need to come into the silence, we come into the silence. Because this is the place to rejuvenate. This is the place to reconnect to the source. And then start sharing again. Because what else to do? We're living to do that. Yeah. And there's a lot of work to be done.
Once
I achieve what I had to achieve for myself, okay, so now I know there's nowhere to go, only here. So what to do now here? Oh my God. There is so much work to be done now to pass this on. And the work is so humongous. That's why when they say 200 people are necessary, that's exactly why, because the weight is too heavy. There's too much work to carry that weight. So every little bit from whatever direction it comes is helpful. That's why Osho also finished, every time he finished his talks, with a joke.
Okay.
I don't have the jokes, but I have his book. It's that thick with all the jokes he has ever spoken. But just to finish his talks with reading some jokes, because of course his discourses were so deep many times, and he would say, "Oh, now I've made you serious. Now we can't leave you like this. We need to have a joke." So I don't know. Do you have a joke?
Ha ha ha. I have so many jokes, but I'm not sure if I would like to share them on these videos because they are really black most of the time. I'm fond of black humor, so...
Yeah, well, you see, that's why the jokes are born, you see, to make life black a little bit lighter.
One joke comes into my mind, which I heard from Tony Parsons. I don't know if you know Tony Parsons. He's an Advaita teacher. He was also asked for a joke, and then he said, yeah, there is an aeroplane, and on that plane there is a Catholic, a Presbyterian, and a Jew. So they are together, and suddenly the pilot comes out of his cockpit and has a parachute on his back, and he tells to the passengers, dear passengers, this plane will crash in exactly 10 minutes, and I have a parachute and I will leave you now. So he opens the door and jumps out, and then the discussion starts between the Presbyterian, the Jew, and the Catholic. So the Presbyterian makes the proposal. The pilot said, there is one more parachute for one of you. Forgot that. Most important thing, of course. So they start, who should have the parachute? And then the Presbyterian makes the proposal, well, our life is almost lived. Over there is a young boy, so let's give the parachute to that young boy. The Jew said, oh, fuck that young boy. The Catholic looks at his watch and says, will 10 minutes be enough for that? Maybe I cut that one out.
I remember one from the Christian Osho series. there are two friends. One is a priest and the other one is a rabbi. So they're two good friends, and they're arguing, of course, you know, whose religion is better. And they're on the boat, you know, on a lake, and they keep arguing. Well, you know, priest says Jesus could walk on water, and you know that's a real miracle, and nobody can do that. And the Jew says, well, are you sure? He says, yeah, never seen anybody walk on water. He says, okay, well, let me show you something. So he rows the boat to a certain spot, and he says, so last time I'm asking you, are you sure that that's a miracle? He says, yeah, that's a miracle, and that's what makes Jesus so powerful and so special. So he says, okay, let me show you something. So he just steps out of the boat, and he steps on the water, and he starts walking. And the priest is really shocked, and he's like, my God, how did you do that? Only Jesus could do that. And the Jew starts laughing and says, yeah, but I don't remember the punchline, but the thing is that who knows that there is a wall underneath the water.
The rocks under the surface.
Right? So, and he's walking on water. So, you know, if you're clever, it just shows who's clever. Are you like a walk on water? But then it appears like a miracle. So, Jesus walked on water. Maybe he walked on rocks. We're talking about the books translated into German. I remember last time I mentioned. So here's this joke. I had a German publisher who wanted to publish my book in Germany, The In Search of the Miraculous. And we did the contract, we signed the contract, and 6 months, 8 months later, because they had to translate, so they translated the book. So 8 months later, he contacted us and he said, I read the book once it was translated, and I still love the book. It gives me many new concepts. I'd like to publish the book. But there's few points that I need for you to remove before I can publish it. And those points would be the story with the Osho needs to go. And there's a reference about Jesus that I had somewhere that has to go. And I said, I'm sorry, but they stay. I cannot have, you know, the book massacred by the parts that you don't agree with. Well, he said, Osho's already finished in Germany, so, and he doesn't have very good reputation in Germany, etc. I said, I know about Osho's reputation in Germany, and I don't think he's dead. More and more people are actually finding him now. And then he came around and he said, the truth came about, he said, I have to say that I am a priest.
No! That's even more black than the one that I... I had with the Presbyterian and the Jew and the Catholic.
This is a real life story. Real. So he said, I'm a priest and I cannot justify this to my superiors, and because they're funding this publishing house, etc. So, and that was the end of that contract. Yeah.
Did he give you the translation at least?
We never discussed it. We just left it there. So I suppose if any other publisher wants to publish, maybe it could be negotiated with him to get the translation. Yeah.
I mean, finding a publisher?
So it's in a process. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. It's in a process. So obviously, sooner or later, it will have to be published in Germany. It's just the right time.
So you are looking already, or you are in contact with publishers?
I have, yes, I have an agent who is actually looking into it. And I have a friend who is a German translator. She's an official certified translator, so she's looking into
it. She should have contacts to publishers, huh?
So